help you find your most qualified applicants.
Whoa, an entire shortlist of unicorns.
See why more than 3 million companies worldwide use Indeed to hire. Post your job at Indeed.com/hire. Indeed, the world's number one job site. Source.com score total visits.
Apple is expanding in Austin, Texas. The company announced a $1 billion investment to build a new campus. Texas Governor Republican Greg Abbott says this is a great deal for the city.
This truly elevates Austin as one of the premier technology hubs in the entire world, and we're proud that it's located right in the heart of Texas.
Court TV is coming back after a 10-year hiatus as we hear from USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes.
Its 17-year run ended in 2008 when Turner rebranded it as True TV.
And what about the gripping testimony, Harlan, where he describes how visibly upset...
This time a network, Court TV, is expected to come back on air next year. It will be relaunched as part of the EW Scripps Company, including its trademark, website, and 100,000 hours of original content that Scripps acquired from Turner Broadcasting. Some original Court TV anchors will be back. Katz Networks, part of the EW Scripps Company, saying it will relaunch Court TV as a new round-the-clock network offering gavel-to-gavel trial coverage on the air and online in May of 2019.
An all-new episode tonight at 10:30 on Court TV.
And finally, it was back on this date in 2008 when an Iraqi journalist hurls his shoes at President George W. Bush during a news conference in Baghdad. Bush ducks and the flying footwear whizzes past his ears. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Well, good afternoon. I apologize for starting late. Traffic was horrendous. You'd have thought there was a major snowstorm. I know it's a Friday afternoon, but you do expect that wouldn't have been this bad. But in any event, let's talk about the weather. Everybody's going to be concerned about the weather this weekend. Tonight, there is rain likely. There has been some sprinkles, actually, this morning at my house. It started out with some snow flurries. But it's warmer, and so tonight there is about a 70% chance of rain. But it won't be freezing by tomorrow. The high should be around 49 degrees. However, there is a 90% chance of rain on Saturday. Saturday night, same thing. And then Sunday, rain is likely, about a 70% chance of rain. So does not look like a good weekend. Not the best weekend to go out and pick out a Christmas tree if you haven't done it. Probably be very careful driving because there are going to be a lot of people out trying to do shopping and, not a good weekend. Of course, by Monday, if you can take Monday off, it'll be mostly sunny, high of about 44 degrees. Tuesday also looks to be a very nice day. So we're here, the program It's the Law. I'm Pat Smits. Those of you who know me know that I'm an attorney here in Hunterdon County. Pretty much practice all over the state, but talk about just legal topics on my program, and that I'll do right after I come back with a couple spots from the sponsors.
Hello, my name is Rob. Hello, my name is Robert Burns. My website is bobburnspeaks.com, and I'm inviting you to listen to my show at 1 o'clock on Friday afternoons on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, entitled "Awaken to Your Purpose." How many people walk through life awake and knowing why they were incarnated here in this beautiful planet? Not a lot of people do. I was in my late 40s by the time I found out, but now I know. So listen to the show, and maybe that'll promote you to awaken to your purpose. And thank you so much.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce.
You're listening to HunterdonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located at the historic Large House, 119 Main Street, Flemington, New Jersey.
This is Tony Clark, paraplanner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
Well, good afternoon. Again, my name is Pat Smits, and we're going to talk a little bit about the law and what's going on. One of the things that I think is something certainly of interest as far as religious freedom, a New Jersey federal judge has denied a motion by the city of Vineland and several local offices, officials, to dismiss a local Muslim group's suit claiming its efforts to establish a mosque are being strangled in red tape. Well, good thing they're not trying to put a mosque in certain other areas where everybody gets strangled with red tape. But We won't talk about that or the fact that businesses are not coming to certain townships in Hunterdon County because of the red tape they find in just trying to build or build out anything. So what's happening? There's another case that I think should be of interest to at least some people in this area, and it's the Highlands Coalition versus the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection. And the plaintiffs in this case, the New Jersey Highlands Coalition, appealed the decision of the Appellate Division affirming the department's, the DEP's, issuance of general permits under the Highlands Act. Now, this is a Supreme Court decision. And the DEP had determined that Bi-County Development Corporation qualified for an exemption under the Highlands Act that is afforded to major development projects that were the subject of a settlement agreement and stipulation of dismissal in the trial court. And this was part of a fulfillment of the fair share obligation in the municipality where the development was located. So what happened is Bi-County had previously reached a settlement with the local borough to permit construction of an inclusionary housing development. So plaintiffs, this is the Highlands Coalition, filed the present action to challenge the issuance of the permits. And they argued that DEP erred as a matter of law in concluding that the borough's planning board's site plan approval was not a final approval because the Bi-County's rights vested upon the approval regardless of the existence of conditions. I know that's a mouthful. So the plaintiffs argued that because Bi-County failed to immediately begin construction, it was not entitled to the exemption under the Highlands Act. So that was the real concern, that because they didn't immediately begin construction, they basically had waived their exemption under the Highlands Act. The Appellate Division affirmed the DEP's ruling, finding that the municipality had conditioned the approval of Bi-County's development upon satisfaction of 57 conditions. And some of those conditions remained unsatisfied when DEP issued its permits. Therefore, the Appellate Division concluded that the site plan approval was not a final approval. Now, on appeal to the Supreme Court, the court affirmed for the reasons expressed by the Appellate Division, but also clarified its holding to rule that the meaning of, quote, final approval, end quote, contained in the Municipal Land Use Act was not to be read into the Highlands Act's use of the term, quote, all final approvals. So the Supreme Court held that under the Highlands Act, DEP was within its discretion to conclude that Bi-County had not yet secured all final approvals. So that was pretty significant. I'm just going to play one quick spot because there's a lot of noise, and I think that the noise is going to, you're going to start hearing the noise instead of me.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Sorry for the noise. I guess it's, if it comes through, hopefully it won't. But in any event, that's the Environmental Law Highlands Coalition versus the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection, the DEP. There were some other cases not approved for publication today. One was somewhat interesting. I may go back. Yeah, I think I will. It had to do with... It wasn't approved, but it had to do with tax foreclosure. And this was a tax foreclosure case, and the plaintiff appealed from an order that permitted a mortgage holder leave to intervene in the foreclosure action and redeem the outstanding tax sale certificates held by plaintiff. And the court affirmed, this was, of course, before the appellate division. The case began when the plaintiff purchased tax lien certificates that were issued due to the non-payment of utility charges. Okay, so somebody didn't pay their utilities, and the plaintiff at that point purchased the tax lien certificates. And this, the purchaser, the plaintiff, was MAS Capital LLC. And not unusual for something like this to happen. This was in, the lot was in Elizabeth City. And the property was assessed to, looks like, a married couple. So the property was also subject to a mortgage held by Newlands Asset Holding Trust. Upon learning that the property was subject to a tax lien, Newlands sought to pay off the lien with the tax collector. And for some reason, the payment was rejected because of the pending foreclosure. Newlands then filed a motion to intervene in the foreclosure case. And of course, they would want to because they held a mortgage, and this tax sale was based on a utility lien. And the trial court first granted Newlands' applications, but then denied it after a motion for reconsideration. Newlands then transferred the mortgage to respondent, Caris Brook Asset Holding Trust. The trial court initially denied Caris Brook's motion to intervene and redeem the tax certificates, but granted the motion on reconsideration. Now, this is back and forth. So the plaintiff then argued that if a tax foreclosure suit was pending, an entity that attempted to redeem a tax certificate with the tax collector instead of moving to intervene in the foreclosure action was thereafter barred from filing an intervention motion. Obviously, a lot of procedural gobbledygook, but what the plaintiff said is, hey, we hold the tax liens, and nobody can go in and just pay them off with the tax collector. They would have to come in and try to intervene. So the court disagreed and found that the plaintiff's argument was based on a misreading of the foreclosure cases. So what happened is the plaintiffs in that case lost, and, these plaintiffs buy up things like this to hope that somebody will not catch it, and they will then, come up with property for, pennies on the dollar. So another case, there was a Kia class action case. It's going into the 18th year. Ongoing since 2001, and the New Jersey Supreme Court has agreed to hear an appeal by South Korean automaker Kia Motors, and this was a $6.3 million class action award, and plus counsel fees and cost to more than 8,000 plaintiffs. So big case, the Supreme Court has agreed to hear it. I think we all have to talk about, John Gibbons Jr. He was the former chief judge of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit. You can tell what I'm thinking about for this time of year. He was remarkable for his many roles in not only he held as a lawyer, but a judge, a professor. And, of course, probably my favorite was that he was a death penalty opponent. And I guess I should not get into, I don't even think that's politics. And I suppose my long-held opposition to the death penalty stemmed from the fact that I grew up in Wisconsin. There was no death penalty. Certainly that didn't. There weren't more murders in Wisconsin because of it. And I just, I understand people certainly believe in it. Some people believe in it for certain crimes. And, but I always appreciated somebody like Judge Gibbons, actually Chief Judge Gibbons, who had such a good rationale, much better than most of us, for opposing the death penalty. There was a criminal law case that was approved for publication this week, and that was a case where the defendant, and again, this went up to the Supreme Court, State v. Wint, W-I-N-T. And in this case, the defendant appealed from the denial of his motion to suppress statements to police and from his conviction for manslaughter and related offenses. What happened here is he was arrested on a New Jersey murder charge and brought to the Camden County Prosecutor's Office for questioning. Now, after invoking his right to counsel, and remember, anyone that is going to be possibly charged with a crime has the what we call the Miranda rights. Very interesting case on why it's called Miranda. Of course, different things are called different because they're named after someone. But in any event, that is universal, that a potential defendant has to be Mirandaized. That's the term we use. So anyway, in this case, after and when someone asks for an attorney, they cannot. The police or prosecutor cannot continue questioning them. So in this case, after invoking his right to counsel, two Pennsylvania detectives investigating an unrelated murder in Bucks County came in to question the defendant. Now, defendant again invoked his right to counsel, ending the interrogation. He was then transferred to Bucks County 6 months later. When I say then, I mean he was transferred to Bucks County 6 months later, and Pennsylvania detectives again began questioning him, but failed to provide counsel. During the interrogation, defendant admitted to committing a murder in Camden. And then after being indicted in Camden County for murder, the defendant moved to suppress the statements he made in Bucks County. The trial court denied the motion, concluding that the defendant had waived his Miranda rights because he had reinstituted the conversation after telling the detectives that he would speak to them when back in Pennsylvania. So that he said that when they left the interrogation in Camden, and then also combined with a six-month gap in questioning. That was why the trial court concluded that he could be questioned. So the appellate division affirmed the defendant's conviction, holding that Pennsylvania detectives violated a U.S. Supreme Court case, Edwards versus Arizona, when they attempted to question the defendant in New Jersey. But the appellate division concluded that the 6 months between the interrogations constituted what they called a break in custody. So on appeal to the Supreme Court, the Supreme Court reversed the denial of the defendant's suppression motion. The Supreme Court agreed that Pennsylvania detectives violated the Edwards case by questioning the defendant in New Jersey after his request for counsel. But the court held that the defendant did not initiate the questioning. in Bucks County because he remained in continuous pre-indictment custody prior to being transferred to Bucks County, and there was no exception to Edwards to find a break in custody. So the Supreme Court held that the admission of defendants' incriminating statements was not harmless, an important protection, and it really is an important protection, and shame on the defendants, for the detectives for not following the law. And that's the point. If anyone or you know anyone who is in fact being questioned, they have to be provided their rights. They do not have to answer questions, and the detectives cannot answer questions, or the prosecutor's office cannot answer, cannot ask questions if someone asks for counsel. They have to back off. And overall, that is good because of the, you know, the prosecutor, the detectives, really, they know this, but more than that, otherwise someone might say something not realizing that they are incriminating themselves. So back after just a couple breaks, not couple breaks, one short break.
5 personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental. NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Well, we had another bail reform ruling from the New Jersey Supreme Court. This was decided on the 11th. State versus Hippolyte. And Justice Rabner wrote the decision. In this case, the defendant appealed the denial of his motion to reopen his detention hearing. So what happened is that the police questioned Michael Gregg, a witness to the shooting death of Terrell Smith. However, Gregg made two separate and inconsistent statements to the police, ultimately, however, identifying the defendant as a shooter in a photo array. Now, the defendant was arrested with the affidavit of probable cause and stating that, quote, an eyewitness positively identified defendant as the actor who shot Smith. So the state moved for pretrial detention but failed to disclose Gregg's first statement indicating that he did not see the shooter. So remember, there were inconsistent statements here. As a result of what the prosecutor said, the trial court ordered the defendant's detention. Remember, under bail reform, there are some strict guidelines as to who can be held pending trial. And that, frankly, was, we thought it was going to create havoc, but it's really been a good system, in my view, because what it does is it doesn't keep people who have not committed the crime in jail for months or even longer. And that was the problem with the bail system. Now, of course, the bail bondsmen don't like this, but what happened, obviously, was poor people ended up in jail for months and sometimes years before they went to trial Then they were found not guilty, but had spent the equivalent of, you know, probably the amount of time they often would have served for the crime. So this was the impetus behind the bail reform. And of course, you know, no one should want people incarcerated unless the crime is very serious, and frankly, that there's a danger if the person is out in the community. And we're paying a ton of money to keep people in jail and prisons. So in this case, the state subsequently produced additional discovery that included Greg's first statement along with information from a CDW, indicating that an eyewitness saw the victim conversing with three individuals before the shooting. That was contradicting Greg's version of the events. So defendant moved to reopen his detention hearing, but the trial court denied his motion. And the trial court ruled that the withheld evidence was not material. On appeal, the appellate division, reversed the denial of defendant's application to reopen his detention hearing. And the court ruled that where the state fails to disclose exculpatory evidence until after a detention hearing, the trial court should use a modified materiality standard, where the trial court considers whether there was a reasonable possibility rather than a reasonable probability that the result of the original detention hearing would have been different had the exculpatory evidence been disclosed. So, and this is applying the standard. Now, this is up, I'm sorry, this was the, when I said the court ruled, that was the Supreme Court ruled when the state fails to disclose exculpatory evidence until after a detention hearing, then the trial court should use a different standard, a lower standard, basically, to determine whether there was a reasonable possibility that the result of the original detention hearing would have been different. So in this case, applying the standard, the Supreme Court ruled that the defendant would be entitled to a new detention hearing, noting that the state's case rested largely on Greg's identification of the defendant as the shooter. The court noted that Greg's identification was undermined by his own prior statement to the police and also other evidence collected by the police that tended to impeach Greg's version of the shooting. So, really important decision for criminals and to make sure that the people who are that should be released pending trial, in fact, are released under the new Bail Reform Act. There's also a Supreme Court ruling that while it is likely not a smart move strategically, that a parent involved in a case in which he or she may lose parental rights does have the right to represent himself or herself in the termination proceedings. And obviously, you know, most of us would shudder at the fact that someone who could get represented didn't. Sorry, I'm going to have to go off and I'll play a news break.
You USA Radio News.
Investigations are ongoing after dozens of bomb threats targeted news outlets, government buildings, banks, libraries, and schools across the nation. The FBI believe the threats stem from a mass email where an unknown writer demands Bitcoin in exchange for safety. President Trump's personal attorney, Michael Cohen, is speaking out after being sentenced this week to 3 years in jail. With more, here's USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes.
I gave loyalty to someone who truthfully does not deserve loyalty.
He was trying to hide what you were doing, correct?
Correct.
And he knew it was wrong?
Of course.
Cohen speaking on Good Morning America with George Stephanopoulos about his being sentenced to 3 years in prison this week for committing campaign finance crimes when he paid two women what's been called hush money in the lead up to the 2016 presidential election.
And Facebook is considering offering pay TV services on their platform. This is USA Radio News.
Are you one of those people who thinks it's okay to drive stoned? I mean, what's the worst that can happen? You end up driving below the speed limit? It's no big deal, right? Wrong. The truth is, your reaction times slow way down when you're high. You not only put yourself in danger, but everyone around you. Talk about a buzzkill. Stop kidding yourself. It's not okay to drive high. If you've been using marijuana in any form, do not get behind the wheel. If you feel different, you drive different. Drive high, get a DUI. Paid for by NHTSA.
It's Kohl's Super Saturday. Take an extra 15% off when you spend under $100. Or take an extra 20% off when you spend $100 or more. Give joy with cozy sweaters, cuddle bed sheets, or a diamond ring. And get joy with Kohl's Cash. Plus, snap a free picture in-store with Santa, Sunday from 1 to 3 p.m. Give joy, get joy at Kohl's. Select styles, 15 and 20% offers valid December 9th through 24th with promo code SNOWMAN. Some exclusions apply. See store or Kohl's.com for details.
Okay, the next case I wanted to talk about was DC P&P. This is formerly DIFAS, Division of Youth and Family Services, now Division of Child Protection and Permanency. Same department, just changed their name and probably spent how many zillions of dollars to change everything. That was the state, of course. And the defendant in this case was RLM. And again, this was a New Jersey Supreme Court case. Justice Patterson wrote the opinion. And in this case, the father appealed the termination of his parental rights and the rejection of his constitutional claim to self-representation in the termination action. And in this case, DCP&P, also called the division, brought a guardianship action to terminate parental rights to both parents, to terminate the parents' rights to their daughter. And in the case, the father stated that he wanted to represent himself at a case management conference, but then he changed his mind and asked for assigned counsel. And in these cases, he would have the right to assigned counsel. And the father did not reassert his right to represent himself until the middle of the trial. And so in the middle of the trial court denied the request and ultimately determined that the division had met its burden of proof, meaning that the division had met its burden of proof, which is a high burden, so that the parental rights would be terminated. And the case went up on appeal. The appellate division affirmed the termination and rejected the father's constitutional claim to a right of self-representation. Now, the Supreme Court found that a parent's decision to appear pro se, meaning represent themselves, in such complex and consequential litigation was poor strategy. However, the statute plainly authorizes a parent to proceed unrepresented. Now, however, the court ruled that that right had to be exercised in a manner that allowed a full and fair adjudication and a prompt and equitable permanency determination for the child. So the parent had to clearly invoke the right to self-representation in a timely manner. And this is really important because we're talking about children. And when cases take years, the children are going to be irreparably harmed. So what the parent has to clearly invoke the right to self-representation in a timely manner. And, of course, the court had to ensure the parent understood the problems in self-representation. In this case, the father did not assert his right until the trial was in progress, and the trial court properly denied it. So that obviously anybody has the right to self-representation, but in this case, because it's termination, might be different in other cases, but because it's termination of parental rights and the child's best interest is the main focus, it has to be done on a timely basis. So this would be also the case. Well, there, in any case involving children, the biggest problem is that they take too long, and the children are in limbo for such a long time. New Jersey Superior Court, John Russo, who was off the bench for nearly 20 months and accused of courtroom impropriety in his questioning of a sexual assault victim on the witness stand, is back on the job, although apparently his disciplinary case and his civil suit against the state judiciary remains pending. Well, that must be fun. So what else? That was certain other things. Not a lot going on. As I said, that constitutional case, I think, was really important. There was another case, again, a constitutional law, and versus the director of the Division of Taxation. This is a tax court case. It was not published, but it's still an important case. In that case, the parties cross-moved for partial summary judgment in the plaintiff's complaint challenging the statute requiring any partnership in New Jersey. Well, actually, it's just any partnership with New Jersey sourced income to pay a per-partner fee of $150 when filing its information return. And in this case, the plaintiff argued that the statute violated the Dormant Commerce Clause. Wow, for most of us who went to law school, you know, that goes way back. But that's what they challenged. And they challenged it because it was a flat tax. So flat tax, the $150 per partner, and the regulations authorizing the fee, although valid, were unworkable as the plaintiff, as to the plaintiff in this case, they argued. In response, the defendant argued that the fee defrayed cost of reviewing and processing partnership information returns and thus was a valid, in other words, it was valid unless proved to be egregiously, basically they said unless it proved that it egregiously exceeded the costs. And alternatively, the defendant argued that the statute did not violate the Dormant Commerce Clause because the division regulations provided for appointment for non-resident partners. Excuse me, not appointment, apportionment. So the court granted defendant's motion in part, and the court first rejected plaintiff's suggestion that any fee or tax was a per se violation of the Dormant Commerce Clause simply because it was a flat amount. So that was rejected. And because the plaintiff was so rejected the fact of that because it was a flat fee and that the payer was involved in interstate commerce. And certainly the Commerce Clause protects interstate commerce. So the court, however, granted defendant's motion to extend Well, actually, the court granted the defendant's motion to the extent that the filing fee was imposed to cover cost of processing and reviewing partnership returns to track the partnership's New Jersey sourced income. So the court ruled that such activity was purely intrastate in nature and therefore did not implicate the dormant commerce clause simply because the payor was involved in interstate activities. So we're talking intrastate, meaning within New Jersey, and interstate, which is what is protected by the Commerce Clause. And the court declined to grant plaintiff partial summary judgment, finding that the statute was not facially discriminatory because all partnerships were treated equally and because the plaintiff had failed to make a prima facie showing that the fee discriminated against interstate commerce. And finally, the court declined to grant summary judgment on the issue of whether the fee was excessive, finding that neither party had managed to resolve all genuine issues. And when they say neither of them had managed to resolve all genuine issues of material fact. So issues of material fact are always important in so many situations. Right? So we're just about finished, and so I will actually finish, move on to the law, and then come back, and we'll talk about sports. And by the way, we will not be here next week, and I think the following week, so since I will not have an opportunity to wish those of you who celebrate Christmas, a Merry Christmas. And for everyone who celebrated Hanukkah, hope you had a great Hanukkah. And then by the time we're back, we'll all be talking about, can you believe it, 2019. So have a good holiday, everyone, and hope to see you. And hope everybody has a healthy and happy holiday.
USA Radio News.
A 7-year-old girl who crossed the U.S.-Mexico border with her father died after being taken into custody by the U.S. Border Patrol. Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen tells Fox News what she knows about this case.
What happened here was they were about 90 miles away from where we could process them. They came in such a large crowd that it took our Border Patrol folks a couple times to get them all. We gave immediate care. We'll